Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, May 13, 2020. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Talk of the Towns, Illinois Impact, Champaign County's 7th fatality, also its youngest, 83rd case at Rantoul Plant. The 7th Champaign County resident to die of COVID-19 was a woman in her 40s with underlying health conditions, local officials said. Before Tuesday, the county's youngest fatality had been a woman in her 60s. Hers was among 6 deaths announced during a 3-week stretch in April, when the county also lost a man in his 70s, 2 men in their 80s, a woman in her 80s, and a man in his 90s. All 7 had unspecified underlying health conditions, according to the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. 20 of Illinois' 102 counties have reported more virus-related deaths than Champaign 7, including the smaller Macon, home to Decatur. It has less than half the number of confirmed cases as Champaign County, but more than twice as many deaths, 17, with the majority linked to a long-term care facility. On the day that the state reported a new 24-hour high for most new cases, with 4,014, Champaign County passed the 300 mark, adding 10. Just one of those was linked to an outbreak at Rantoul Foods, where 83 employees have now tested positive, according to CU Public Health's Julie Pride. Testing of employees continues, she said. Among Tuesday's cancellations and closings, next month's Vermilion County Fair, Tuscola's Sparks in the Park celebration, the 2020 season at the Monticello Aquatic Center, and Parkland's Sterkel Planetarium for all of June and July. Ford County, Mixed Signals About Potential of Opening Up, by Deborah Pressey. There are bills to pay and clients who miss her, but Teresa McRae said she can't defy the governor's executive order and reopen her hair salon ahead of an official okay from the state. I've got a salon license. I've also got a cosmetology license, said McRae, owner of Gibson City's Speakeasy Salon and Spa. I can't run the risk of losing my license. A day after the Ford County Board approved a resolution saying business owners should have the opportunity to reopen if they choose, with safety precautions taken, some business owners were all for it, and some were hesitant. We don't want to be the first one stepping out, said Jackie Fields, who helps out at Blue Star Cafe of Gibson City. Customers were urging Blue Star to be the first to fully reopen, she said, but the owners want to know more, and they want to talk to the health department. McRae warned there could be consequences for non-essential businesses reopening in defiance of a state order. Even if the county and local police aren't going to go after businesses that reopen early, McRae said, the state police could still come and shut us down. The resolution passed by the board also states that continuation of the executive order prohibiting the opening and operation of non-essential businesses represents a threat to those businesses and the overall economy of Ford County. It also states the county board supports steps being taken by the Ford County Public Health Department and local law enforcement agencies in promulgating a procedure whereby local businesses have the option to open without concern of local enforcement of the governor's executive order. County Board member Randy Ferguson said the resolution is a show of support for small local businesses. Those that choose to go ahead and reopen would be expected to follow the same safety guidelines essential businesses are and any that are licensed by the state would need to comply with state requirements, he said. Danielle Walls, community health educator with the Ford County Health Department, said the health department lacks the authority to tell non-essential businesses they can override the governor's orders for them to remain closed for now. The health department plans to work with businesses about how they can protect themselves and their customers, she said, but the health department isn't encouraging them to reopen. Hood's Ace Hardware in Gibson City and Mahomet has remained open as an essential business, but Jim Hood, who owns the stores with wife Amy, said some of their friends have had to keep their businesses closed since late March. And they're going to lose their livelihood if they don't get something going, he said. As long as businesses commit to operating safely, Hood said, he wants to see them able to reopen. I'm anxious for those folks to get back to business so we still have them, he said. As part of the safety measures the Hood's two stores have in place, all customers must use hand sanitizer when they enter to help protect surfaces. Masks are on and shields are up, he said. People have been really terrific and we're really grateful to our customers, Hood said. Big box versus small business. Janine Litwiller, owner of Gibson City's Strictly Kids resale shop, was waiting to learn exactly what the county board resolution means, she said. I just don't know what the clear-cut direction is, she said. When she has the go-ahead, though, Litwiller said she's ready to reopen. Selling clothing for kids in the new pandemic world has meant creating a new online store, posting pictures of at least some of the merchandise, taking orders and bringing items out to the curbside, Litwiller said. She and her employees have also become personal shoppers, filling requests for certain items and certain sizes. We take pictures and send them to them, and if they like it and approve of it, they will purchase that over the phone, she said. Litwiller said she respects measures put in place to keep people safe, but she also knows Ford County is a different community from others. What I find hard is the big box stores staying open, she said. They have a lot more financial backing than us little people do, and it's very difficult to pay the bills with the minimal income coming in. Skin of our teeth. As long as people maintain social distances, wear masks, and take other precautions, Richard Arnold at Paxton's, a picket fence florist and Market Street Kids resale store, said he doesn't see a problem with local businesses reopening. The problem will be getting people to come back out, he predicted. This business, owned by his girlfriend, is surviving, Arnold said. It delivered a lot of flowers for Mother's Day. But the resale shop has been closed since pandemic restrictions took effect. We're hanging on by the skin of our teeth, he said. Scott Allen, who owns Paxton Hardware and Rental with wife Lisa, said he's also in favor of his fellow businesses reopening. He stands for capitalism, he said, and being able to do what you choose to do. His store has remained busy, Allen said, but he's also working shorthanded, not taking days off, and paying his older workers to stay home. And those employees are itching to come back to work, he said. While she can't reopen her salon yet, McRae said she doesn't begrudge other businesses a chance to reopen. When the stay-at-home order first went into effect, she thought she had plenty to do around the house to keep her busy, she said. But then the order was extended again and again. I'm finding out what retirement is like, and I'm only 57, she said. Urbana Park District. Board unanimously okays charity harvest of geese. Population to be reduced from 80 to 100 to 10 to 20. By Ben Zichterman, Urbana. After comments from a divided public, the Urbana Park District Board unanimously approved applying for a charity harvest to reduce the number of geese at Crystal Lake Park. The harvest would help bring the population from about 80 to 100 down to 10 to 20, said Derek Liebert, the park district superintendent of planning and operations. "We want some geese to remain," he said. "Our goal is to manage them at a sustainable level." The park district now needs to apply for a permit from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. If it's approved, employees of the United States Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Division would come to the park in June or early July to collect the geese and take them to a facility to be killed, with the meat donated to a food bank. The park district would continue managing the remaining population through other means, but the harvest is expected to keep the population at a manageable level for 7 to 10 years, staff wrote in a memo to the board. The park district has been trying to manage the Canada geese population since at least 2012, including with chemical deterrents, coyote decoy hazing, applying oil to eggs, dog hazing, and the Lake Habilitation Project, which includes planting taller natural grasses that are less attractive to geese. The charity harvest is expected to cost between $4,000 to $6,000, depending on how many birds are killed. "We never wanted to be here. We really wanted to use every tool available to us so that we wouldn't come to the point where we're considering this," Liebert said. "We knew there would be some mixed feelings about it, and that's evident today." While the plan got full support from the board, members of the public who commented during the virtual meeting were much more divided. Urbana resident Patch Adams said he enjoys the geese and attended a protest Tuesday against the harvest. "I am sure huge numbers of people are feeling better in their souls and lives because of these geese," he said. "I love how they walk across the street and show patience for the cars. It's an embarrassment to kill our friends." But resident Greg Springer said the geese are out of control and voiced his support for the harvest. "They will come after you and hiss after you and take over the sidewalk, and there's no place to sit because there are feces everywhere," he said. Prairie Lands Council, Sign of the Times, Camps Closed, by Bob Asmussen, Savoy. The Boy Scout motto, "Be Prepared," is being put to the test by the coronavirus pandemic. This week, Prairie Lands Council Scout Executive Jared White announced summer programs at Camp Robert Drake near Fairmount are being canceled. The annual camps date to 1932. "It's definitely a big blow," White said. "It hurts all of us." During the week-long residence camps, scouts ages 11 to 17 arrive on Sundays and leave on Saturday. Among the activities, canoeing, kayaking, archery, and shooting. The reaction to the news from the scouts and their families? "Fortunately, we have a very understanding population here on our council, and people know what we're doing is trying to keep kids safe. That's our number one priority," White said. The Prairie Lands Council includes about 2,700 youths. It covers 9 counties in central Illinois and 2 in Indiana. "Just trying to get the kids some normalcy." White expected about 900 to participate in all of the camps. "Just trying to get the kids some normalcy during this time," White said. "They haven't been able to go back to school, see all their friends, so they think, well, we'll be able to go to the summer camp and be able to see our friends and do something. When that gets yanked out from underneath you, it's difficult on them." And it's real difficult on the Prairie Lands Council, especially financially. We rely on that for our funding sources, White said. It's a large part of our budget. To have that money yanked away from us, it's going to be hard for us to operate on in the year. We'll be okay, but it will be difficult. The Prairie Lands Council has 4 full-time staff members and 3 part-timers. We have reserves for a little while, but that will have a massive impact on how we will do business for the rest of the year, White said. We have to really cut some things. What we're trying to do is keep people employed and not have to lay off anybody. How are we going to be able to function? White wants to see Camp Drake resume in the future. The sooner, the better. My hope, if a vaccine is found, it is found quickly, he said. I don't know that we're ever going to be like we were before. It's going to change the way we do a lot of things. Other local nonprofit organizations face similar challenges. We rely on meetings and we rely on fundraisers, White said. There are 200, 300 people at these fundraisers. If we don't have that, how are we going to be able to function? That's going to hit all of us pretty hard. White exhausted every option in an effort to hold camps this year. The Fairmount facility has enough space, 400 acres, to make social distancing possible. A typical week at Camp Drake would include 150 people, far more than is currently allowed. That cannot be done, White said. White started working at the Prairie Lands Council in January 2019. He has been with the Boy Scouts since February 2007. Despite pandemic-related restrictions, White said the council continues to do great things. In February, the National Association of Boy Scouts of America filed for bankruptcy. That doesn't affect our local council, White said. As a product of the program, all I want to do is see scouting grow. U of I Residence Hall. Student gets court supervision for making noose. By Mary Schenk, Urbana. A University of Illinois student who said he gave 30 seconds of thought to the consequences of making a tiny noose out of a string and leaving it where others could see it has been sentenced to a year of court supervision. Andrew Smith, 20, of Normal, pleaded guilty Tuesday morning before Judge Heidi Ladd in Urbana to disorderly conduct, a Class C misdemeanor, admitting that he tied a string into a noose on September 1 and left it hanging in an elevator at Allen Hall in Urbana. The sentence of supervision, along with 50 hours of public service and a $75 fine, allows Smith, who had no prior criminal contacts, to escape a permanent conviction should he successfully complete his sentence without further problems. He wrote apology letters and appeared sincere, said State's Attorney Julia Reitz, who approved initial charges of hate crime, a felony, and disorderly conduct against Smith in September. She said police who investigated found that Smith had no history of racial prejudice. The more serious charges of hate crime and 3 other misdemeanor counts of disorderly conduct, naming additional victims who were alarmed and disturbed by the noose, were dismissed in return for his guilty plea. The agreement was worked out by Smith's attorney, Audrey Thompson of Urbana, and Assistant State's Attorney Kristen Alferink. Reitz and Alferink said their office tried to contact the victims named in the charges about the resolution. Only one replied and said she was fine with that sentence for Smith. Assistant State's Attorney Justin Umlaw laid out the following facts Tuesday for Ladd. The noose was discovered in the elevator on September 2 and brought to the attention of a resident advisor. News of it spread quickly on social media, sparking a broad range of commentary. A young woman who knew Smith told U of I police that he was an invited guest at Allen Hall and that he found the piece of string, tied it into a noose, and left it on a hook in the elevator, despite her admonition that he shouldn't do it. The woman contacted Smith after seeing the flurry of social media commentary, but he didn't think the conduct was serious enough to turn himself in to police. When police spoke with him September 2, Smith gave the following response, Umla said. He did it because he had heard stories of campus buildings being haunted, the prosecutor recounted. Smith also told police the knot he chose to make just happened to be a racial hate symbol, and that he had spent 30 seconds thinking about how his actions could be considered a hate crime. Although he was a sophomore at the time of his arrest, Thompson told the judge who initially set his bond he had enough credits to graduate this year. He was majoring in math. U of I spokeswoman Robin Kaler said the registrar's office lists him as a student. Graduation stage is set. Urbana High School's virtual ceremony for honorees experience is weird, quiet. By Jim Rosso, Urbana. Graduation day started just like Zoe Bowers imagined it would. The Urbana High senior, dressed to the nines underneath her cap and gown, posing for pictures in her front yard Tuesday morning. Then it took a strange turn. I'd been to graduation at State Farm Center, and it was amazing. A big stage, tons of people, hearing your name called, and families going crazy, Bowers said. It was just a little different. Tuesday kicked off Urbana High's three-day virtual graduation production, leading to a video presentation May 23. In groups of 10, seniors were invited to the high school auditorium, where, one by one and socially distanced, they walked a mostly empty stage, picked up a diploma case, and smiled for a camera. Only students were allowed inside the building, and each was handed a mask at the beginning of the process. I don't know how to describe it, said Bowers, who had a 9 a.m. appointment. It was really weird. In the movies, you graduate and then go meet your family and celebrate. This was really quiet. Urbana has reserved State Farm Center on July 25 as an alternate date for in-person graduation. We hope that by this time, large events will be allowed and safe for all involved, Principal Mitch Berenson wrote in a letter to students. Students will keep their caps and gowns until then. Our goals have always been about honoring our seniors in a way that prioritizes health and safety, while also complying with state and local social distancing orders and guidelines, Berenson said. Day one was smooth, Cameron Williams said. The school district's director of marketing and communications is quarterbacking the video project. Williams said the district is adjusting schedules as necessary to make sure every graduating senior has their moment to walk across the stage and get their photo taken. We are really appreciative for all the support we have gotten from our families, and we're looking forward to the finished product. After Tuesday's ceremony, students were allowed to clean out lockers and pick up yearbooks. For many, it was their first time inside the school since a statewide closure on March 17. I woke up and told my dad, "It's graduation day," and that I was going to go about it like normal, said Bowers, a National Honor Society member who is also active in Urbana's Key Club and theater program. I appreciate everything the school has done, but it was different. It's not like I thought my senior year would end. Rand Tool Incident, Teen Held in Drug Deal Shooting, by Mary Schenck, Urbana. A Champaign teen who allegedly shot a man during a cannabis deal has been arrested. members of the U.S. Marshals Task Force found Quentin Hyman, 17, in Champaign late Monday afternoon and arrested him on a warrant issued earlier in the day after he had been charged with aggravated battery with a firearm and aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. State's Attorney Julia Reitz said that the afternoon of April 10, Hyman allegedly shot an 18-year-old Rantoul man in the back in the 1000 block of Falcon Drive, Rantoul. Rantoul Police Sergeant Rodney Sullivan said the victim was hospitalized for a couple of days, then released. Reed said neighbors told police that witnesses saw the victim holding four or five $20 bills in his hand and talking with two males. The trio was having a disagreement, she said, and one man pulled a gun, shot the man holding the cash, then got in a silver vehicle and sped off. Police found six bullet casings and a magazine containing rounds that matched the spent casings on the ground near where the victim was shot. The victim told police he had communicated with someone on Snapchat who wanted to buy cannabis and arranged to meet the man. The would-be customers demanded the cannabis, but when the man said he didn't have any, one of the pair pulled a gun. The victim handed over money, which he then tried to snatch back. In the process of struggling over the cash, the man was shot in the back. Police were led to Hyman through the vehicle in which he left, Reitz said. Only he has been criminally charged. Because of the seriousness of the charge, Hyman, a juvenile who listed an address in the 2000 block of Moreland Boulevard, is automatically prosecuted as an adult. He is on parole from juvenile prison for felony retail theft, Reitz said. If convicted of the shooting, he faces 6 to 30 years in prison. He is being held in the juvenile detention center in lieu of $500,000 bond and is due back in court May 22 for a probable cause hearing. Champaign, man charged with robbing bus rider, by Mary Schenck, Urbana. A Champaign man who allegedly stole something from a man while both were riding a Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit Direct District bus has been charged with robbery and theft. Trezor Banau, 25, who listed an address in the 1400 block of Paula Drive, was arrested about 4 p.m. Monday for allegedly stealing a Bluetooth speaker from an acquaintance. A Champaign police report said the officer, in speaking with the victim, perceived him to have a mental deficit. The 28-year-old victim told the officer that he knew Banau and they began talking while on a bus together. Banau allegedly went through the man's pockets and took his speaker. The two struggled over it and the victim's glasses were broken. Banau got away. Surveillance video from the bus shows Banau hitting the man in the head several times as the victim tried to stop him. Police found Banau later. He denied taking anything from the victim, but later admitted he had gone through his pockets to rob him. Court records show Banau has prior convictions for battery. Judge Tom DeFanis set his bond at $2,500 and told him to be back in court June 30. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette dated Wednesday, May 13, 2020. Please stay tuned.